Welcome back. You're listening to another episode of The Todd Donald Show, a weekly podcast where artists and performers go to chat about nothing. Hosted by Canadian singer-songwriter Todd Donald.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Mom, and unnamed other listeners that my listener count tells me about. I appreciate you. Thank you for being here. It's me. Welcome to another episode of The Me Show. This episode, like several of the more recent episodes, is spotlighting someone who's made shows in television and a lot of stuff that I love on Channel 101. Now, his main focus is shifted, and I'll let my guest better illustrate what I mean by that. Before I get to his introduction, I want to tell you all that I'm positively overwhelmed and happy to feel, or enabled to choose to feel, like an embraced honorary member of the 101 community. Either because of the songs or my commitment to inviting past, present show creators and performers on this podcast to talk about it, mainly themselves, of course. But the launch point of me knowing about them will typically be upwards of a decade of enjoyment that they've brought me with content that can be found on channel101.com. Even though Aaron and Adam and Nick are significantly more fun to listen to than I think I am. Channel 101 Patreon podcast. Check it out. And Aaron Pierce and Adam Garland in particular, who haven't been on the show yet, are fine folks who do all kinds of things behind the scenes, behind the website, social media content, Twitch, and more. I'm not exactly sure what the staff is or who else is involved, but let's just say we have words here and there, and it's nothing but kind words, and I'm quite fond of them. So fond of them and 101, in fact, that I bought myself a hoodie and a coffee mug recently from the 101 merch site. I call that an early birthday gift for myself because it's my birthday tomorrow, October 7th, yay. I'm going to be 36, and I'm in the Arctic. Yay. Anyway, speaking of real feels, there was certainly no avoiding this with and for Brad Gage. Once again, it's a conversation with someone I feel like I understand, and quite probably likewise. Brad actually spends time studying masculinity, what it means to be a man, and dedicated to the proposition of challenging antiquated definitions, inviting male-identifying people to be a part of a future that's better for everyone, a future that toxic masculinity is not invited to be a part of. It seems like a huge challenge, and as a fellow privileged and privilege-aware fellow, is it possible in our lifetime to see that future, or is it better to offer oneself to working at it regardless? I see Brad, what he's doing regardless. Bad sentence structure. He does this in a project called Real Feels, where among video essays and poetry, there are interviews where he has a big talk, real vulnerable and engaging talk with his guests for the podcast on YouTube and audio only consumption, available at the links on this podcast episode description. And right now, here's Brad and I, and as Brad will explain, the focus has shifted currently to the video essays, and if I'm saying anything, I'm saying that I'm on board with any and all of it. I think he's a beautiful human being, and I invite you all to listen, jump on board with, and engage with
Brad Gage.
Hey guys, Toby Tucker here, checking out an exclusive test opening of the League of Cheesedom. Who's this old guy?
Scary.
Catch y'all next Toby time.
Vines are 6 seconds. Try not to talk so long next time.
Didn't expect me to show up at boys' night, huh? Well, this is what you get when you don't call your dad back for 2 weeks.
You think I'm a monster? Well, maybe. But you should take a long, hard look at yourself before you judge anybody.
So, all is well for now, at least. You know who would have cheered me up a whole lot quicker, though? Dan. You're just so lucky you still have Arnie around.
No, I mean, I don't... There's no, I've listened to it. I mean, there's nothing in particular I should be prepared with, right?
Oh, no, of course. And that's the best way, because I sometimes hate myself with a host, but the me struggling to find words is when I push the hardest to just say something. I guess performers have that, I don't know, natural or trained ability that I don't as a musician. We're so used to just writing the thing and then on stage, here's the thing I already made.
Yeah, but it's still performative. I mean... People can feel whatever it is, and sometimes if it is just you performing it, what's nice about that is that all of the excitement, all of the spirit you put into creating that piece of music can just come out again. It's almost like a little,
right?
You know, you're like saving a video game or something. It's like you're right. You brings you right back to where you were in that moment. At least as far as my experience and what I've seen. And I think you do a great job on the podcast. I think your enthusiasm is what defines the show, in my opinion.
That's really neat for me to hear. I could say some things at you, and I don't want to waste my show's time with me talking, is something that you'll hear me say a lot, because it's true. But I would like to start off by asking the thing that you ask every guest at the start of your show. So what are you feeling right now?
I am feeling anxiety about what is happening politically in our country, in the country of the United States. I can't say ours because you are not here, but, and you're Canadian, right?
Right.
Are you Canadian? Yeah, you're Canadian. So, but I mean, our North American, you know, area, we're all affecting each other.
Yeah.
There's some anxiety there. I am working on balancing the exposure to the things that are making me anxious, and then working on my passion, on projects that I love, and not just a passion project, but projects I'm passionate about that are also paying me. And one in particular, in this moment, right before we started this podcast, I was editing my next Real Feels video, which is about online YouTube dating coaches. And it's,
oh my God,
it's not the most joyful place. It's not the most like, you know, celebratory place. It's a lot of, I'm living in a very critical mindset this weekend, because that's what my job is partially with Real Feels. So that's where I am. I'm a little bit anxious, a little bit critical, and still overwhelmingly hopeful, because what else am I doing if I don't keep that close?
I like that a lot. Sort of in response to that, I got it pretty easy, because at this moment, the only thing I'm anxious about is this interview, because, and that's small potatoes by comparison, right?
Why are you anxious?
Anxious because, let me put it in words that I can be happy with leaving in the final edit. I have admired...
Sure, I mean, yeah.
Your acting ability is so good. I'm sorry, I want to find a poetic, adult, articulate way of expressing that. Ever since 2013 with Tony T on the New York Stories, the Channel 101 show, I'm just like, this guy is the Jack Nicholson of comedy. You have this depth thing, the combination of real and super real. I've heard it referred to as full gauge. I've been on board since then. And also, I find myself so fucking endeared to you as a person because of what started off as the conversation from why you were leaving the Channel 101 podcast into launching Real Feels. I very closely resonate with. I've done podcasting for like 12 years now, and I've never enjoyed the conversations as much with people who are so early in their personal development that they're just selling something. They wouldn't dare break away from selling it to be vulnerable and real and raw and just talk about themselves as themselves. You really, in a beautiful way, had these conversations on your show, Real Feels, which I'm being real right now, but I also want to plug it, by the way, Real Feels on YouTube.
You're doing a great job. You're hitting all the plugs. And as a host, I can appreciate getting the copy down right. So yeah.
The joy, creating the anxiety is all based in affection, if that makes any sense. That's what I'm feeling right now.
I get that. I totally get it. And I can't, I don't want to push anything on you, but I do think that we're going to have some fun. I hope that you get less anxious as we go on.
Oh, for sure.
Because I see what you're doing. I love what you're doing. Like I said, the enthusiasm that you have about these people that you talk to, I appreciate, and you've already made me feel very relaxed. So, and I don't feel as anxious even now about what was going on, because what's more fun to focus on than talking to someone who, in mutual respect, and also just kind of forgetting about these anxieties for a moment, and just honestly just broing down for an hour.
Yeah. Before we continued, I'd like to give you a more real feels related introduction to Brad's work if you need it. Earlier, I played some of his animation voiceover reel, but this right here is something we'll be talking about later on the show, and it's part of his video essay on real feels, talking about the surprising masculinity of Mr. Rogers.
I've got an important question for you. What does it mean to be a man? I'm sure some ideas come to mind right away. A man is strong, confident, powerful, successful. I'm sure kind is in there somewhere. A man is, well, a man. Manly, masculine. We just know it when we see it, right? It's The Rock, it's Don Draper, it's the Mandalorian. But I believe there's a new, different model for manliness that could fit better in our evolving world. A model that brings us back to who we really are at our core. And that, surprisingly, is the potent masculinity of Mr. Rogers. Since Mr. Rogers has been an icon for decades, it's hard to look at him the same way you would, say, a teacher in your school or a guy you work with. A person. But more than so many famous people, his work was a crystal clear reflection of who he was as a person and what he thought about the world. I, like many of you, grew up watching Mr. Rogers. I didn't adore him or obsess over him as much as I did with stuff like Star Wars or Spider-Man, but he was always kind of around. A friend, literally a neighbor who popped into my home sometimes and made me feel good. Somebody who helped explain things to me. And once I grew out of this demographic, I pretty much forgot about him and moved on with my life because talking about being gentle and being kind was stuff only for little kids, not growing men. Cut to 25 years later when I see the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor and the biopic A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood a year later. I could see there was something revolutionary about this guy who I always thought was kind of just for kids. He was like a shot of medicine to treat a moment when we have drifted so far away from remembering how special the people are around us. And after reading as much as I could about the guy, I realized that he showcased his unique masculinity in four distinct ways. Number one, power through gentleness.
What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do seems very right, what do you do? Do you pound some clay?
For a lot of people, they definitely do not handle their anger by punching clay. That's ridiculous. But what's even more ridiculous is how often we resort to violence to release our anger. More than 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner, a stat that skews overwhelmingly toward male-on-female violence, with one in four U.S. women experiencing severe intimate partner violence in any way. Fred Rogers taught us how to deal with anger in a healthy and non-violent way.
And I feel that if we in public television can only make it clear that feelings are mentionable and manageable, we will have done a great service for mental health. I think that it's much more dramatic that two men could be working out their feelings of anger, much more dramatic than showing something of gunfire.
Shall I just toss something out there?
Do it.
I'm sure this isn't the first conversation about it or the first one you've had with anyone, or let alone on your show. But the thing about redefining or reframing getting the blues, like reframing getting sad, getting depressed, falling off of the horse that is our culture and social media meme motivational quote society. It comes to a point where I imagine that people get doubly upset that they got sad, and they're sad about getting upset because the idea to the effect of some of these quotes is, this is how you'll never be sad again. This is how you'll never give up again.
Yeah.
And I think that's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, we need to be sad. We need to give up. We need to be depressed.
you can't reject part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. We need it. If it wouldn't exist if we didn't need it, because that's the balance that we have here. So sorry, I guess I don't know. Are you asking me a question about it, or
I thought we could throw thoughts in the pot to the effect of what you were starting to say there. Like I guess the question is, do you agree? And am I an amazing person for saying what I said? No. What's a better way to approach it? I personally feel like it's memeable, I guess, but maybe the notion is the next time you get sad is your next step towards better understanding what happiness is to you. Most of our conversations with our that are not recorded, that are off the record or on shows like yours, deal with the human condition and all of its what seems like hopelessness. Again, here's more of me talking. God damn it!
I see what... No, this is what I do. This is what I... While I'm happy to talk about myself, I also... I just really like to ask questions. To kind of... Yeah, to address what you're talking about, I am only an expert on my own experience.
Right.
My background is not in psychology. My background's in entertainment, but all I've been doing for the past year and a half with Real Feels is studying psychology, specifically centered around masculinity and gender issues. All of that aside, if you're asking for my take on the modern commodification of joy and the memeability of what some people might say toxic positivity, I think there's a difference between toxic positivity and seeing what is helpful to you emotionally. And to me personally, Real Feels is the result of an incredible depression. Real Feels is the result of a dark night of the soul, of a questioning of my purpose, and honestly, not really quite having a firm grasp on what I was here to do. You know, it was a crisis. It was it came around right around 30, and as it does, and I luckily have come out the other side of it. But what is helpful to me is a combination of knowing that there is a purpose, everybody has a purpose, and it's beautiful and it's awesome and it makes sense to everybody. And if we were just given it in a moment, if we were just out of nowhere given it, because that does happen, but if most people were, then it wouldn't necessarily feel earned. Mm-hmm. There would not be the same sense of pride. So the people that you find who are able to get out of, and I'm talking more about professional, purpose-driven depression, it's worth it because it's worth it. It's worth it because you worked for it and you figured it out. But as far as just the idea, the reality of emotional sadness, of depression, I think it is important, and people talk about it all the time about self-care and protecting yourself. It's important to balance exposing yourself to things every day that are the news, that are science, that are real, and the things that help you stay informed, and then also to do the big work inside and the quiet work and the work that nobody else gets to see because it's not their business and it's only for you. And when you focus on that more, if you talk to yourself and follow your gut and have a little bit of a quieter time, less exposed to the noise, that is how I think you find a little bit more of that peace. And when people talk about happiness and I want to be happy, I think what they're really talking about for the most part is finding peace. And that's it can be fleeting, and security, you know, I think is part of that too. And peace is an overarching feeling that you can go back to that sits in the core of your body. And that is the thing that I kind of strive for. So for me, looking for solutions to moments when I'm depressed, it is looking inward. It is meditating. It is gratitude, writing lists. I mean, just writing a list of all the things that are good that you love, and then also just instead of feeding myself the anxious ideas and the noise of Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, which I do all the time, but like anything, it's a diet, and what right. you feed is what you feel, and what you feed on is what you feel. And so just remembering all these things, it's a beautiful balance of a million complicated things. Striving for peace in yourself, that's really all you can have control over. The more that you detach from trying to control other people or too much of the big picture, like you're supposed to speak for everybody and every tweet you make is supposed to change the world. It's like, don't try for that, because you're gonna really tear yourself up inside. Mm-hmm. We are powerful as a community, and it's important to be activated, but we are not each at the center of the universe, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It's a pretty ambly answer. But it is well, it is an encapsulation of everything I can speak to with that kind of open-ended question.
I mean, some of my best explorations of myself were alone anyway, for sure, because that's when it's silent enough for you to hear yourself.
Yeah. People say trust your gut for a reason. Because we listen to people, but who do we listen to the most? Ourselves. And so sometimes that fucks us up, and sometimes it's good. And the tough part is when you don't trust what your gut is saying, because it has led you to a place where you're repeatedly down and you're repeatedly low. But just keep going back to it. Just keep going back to yourself, and get help and talk to people and talk it out and get professional help if you need it. But you're always going to have the answers more than anybody else.
Well, it's not that I want to jump completely away from that, because I feel like this thing that I want to ask about as an outsider especially isn't entirely unrelated to what we're talking about right now. There are some, I'm not sure what the ratio is. I've watched or listened to 5 to 6 episodes of your beautiful Real Feels show, available on podcasts and any podcast outlet. There are people that you chat with that are a part of the industry, and the word industry pokes out a lot. I have no experience being in any creative industry, but I wonder, from your experience, are you able to separate? Sorry, I didn't form a question about this, but you've written, directed, produced, you're a terrific actor and terrific at all the things, I think, based on what I've seen.
You're very kind.
I'll find the question in front of you. With my pants down, why not? Like, just the idea.
I am here for all of it. I am here for all of it. Do not worry about me.
I'm going to go over here and fuck this bridge. It's fascinating to me, the idea, like the moment that the thing that the industry is comes into play. I imagine that any of you out there who act or sing or do anything, especially in this place I've mythified in only a good way, Los Angeles, it must split people in two who genuinely enjoy making the thing in its purest form, and then tosses them up in the air of, your worth is now in our hands. And I don't know how it works at all, but I just imagine that there are non-artistic people that come into play that are in charge of people's self-worth. Were you ever not, and are you at a place now where you feel like you're in ownership of how you feel about the things that you make?
Todd, are you reading my diary? What's going on here? This is exactly these are exactly the ideas and the questions that I'm facing right now, and have been for, I mean, all of Real Feels, and maybe that comes through, and maybe you're picking up on that,
does.
I don't know, but there is a kind of unwritten promise that I think a lot of people feel when they come to Los Angeles to work in the entertainment industry, particularly as a creative. There is an opportunity, there's a gamble, but there is a promise that if you work hard enough, and if you're pretty much more than work hard enough, because that's actually not it, more than if you are talented enough, if you are special enough, you will get the success that you desire. That is, of course, true for the people who get success. And success being like a full-fledged career that is consistent and at a level that is revered in TV shows, magazines, movies, all the machine of the industry. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of an invisible threshold. But the thing about it is, absolutely, you are as a creative person at the whim of other people needing to discover you, needing to discover how special you are, how good you are, and how hard you've worked. And you try and try not to be cynical and just accept it as it is and accept that this industry is a machine and it's not a as much of an art as it is a craft. And there's a lot of beauty to that. And the industry works in its own particular way. And there's you weave in through it and you get all the tools you need and meet all the people. And it's more about who you know and not what you know. And you learn all these things. And they're all true. But no matter what, you have to eventually look at what you are seeking and if it's validation for your ego, which a lot of it really, really services that, a lot of this work. Mm-hmm. No matter how grounded a celebrity is, they're never going to be that grounded because they live, they are rewarded for ego. They're rewarded for how special they are. Everyone is special and should be seen and celebrated and revered.
Yeah.
Every human being. But it is a very interesting machine. And I think you do, after a certain amount of time, either you get successful and servicing your ego in that way will be perpetuated, or you reach a point where what you want changes. I am continuing to do a lot of the same stuff I was doing before. I'm auditioning, I'm acting and stuff, I'm hosting. But I have realized that my purpose is less about my ego and less about look how great I am, which is of course still in there for anyone who performs.
Right.
But I have been really embracing more of the idea of service and being helpful, because that's my favorite word, helpful.
Mm-hmm.
What is helpful to me as far as my emotional state? What is helpful to me as far as my purpose? What is helpful to me for other people, to the greater good? You know, Amy Poehler said it, I forget where, was that some award ceremony or some sort of gala? You know, it's a real big ego boost to serve, to help others. And people don't really talk about that much because you don't think that helping out other people makes you feel good, because it's not about you, but it does. It is an endless well of empowerment, helping other people. Like that's the solve. That's my life hack, mm-hmm. for my own personal experience, is serving people in whatever way I can is the most empowering thing. Mm-hmm. Ego is still in there. Still very powerful. Still wrestling with that. But it has been a place after 10 years of being in the industry to some minor successes and going, it's okay to not have the same attachment to the invisible promises of the Los Angeles entertainment industry.
Hey, so normally I'll have a song in an episode with a non-musical guest. And if I do, I'll put it at the end of the episode, typically. With no rhyme or reason today, I'm going to switch it up and put it in the middle. If for no better reason, then I'm excited and completely enamored by Denise Chalad's music. A recent discovery for me, thanks to Bandcamp. Denise is an Irish rapper who sounds both unique and fresh and takes me back also. What a revelation. Please do not Spotify this, but rather support the artist and buy it on Bandcamp. This is a track called Re-Ra on the album Go Bravely that came out a few months ago. Check it out.
Got a Re-Ra, hallelujah. Feeling so shimmerina. I will not fall for a doula. Bust from my drive, keep the pressure on. Never lesson, that's lesson one. Got a Re-Ra, hallelujah. So shinafina, I will not fall for a gula. Bust for my drive, keep the pressure on.
never less, and that's lesson one. Everyone is family, but everything is relative. I won't trust a hypothesis without a frame of reference. My socialite was getting thin. Been wasting my energy, hiding under bushels and memories and lethargy. So honestly, curiosity killed my day job. But keep it, I don't want it back. Don't judge a book by its spilt book, cause your last chance won't be your last. Unavailable, airplane mode, you can't crack my air code. Lend me your ear and I'll show you how I go. Greatness on the brain, I'm not afraid of what, where, when, who. Gave this my government name, I'm just saying, watch what I'll do. They say they're looking for change, out all the pieces together. Gray sky, so I learned how to rain, and now I'm forecasting the weather.
Arira, hallelujah, so Shafina, I will not fall. The first form I drive, keep the pressure on. Never less, and that's lesson one. Arira, hallelujah, so Shafina, I will not fall. Do the first form I drive, keep the pressure on. Never less, and that's lesson one.
I do the damn thing like Arden Crusher. I'm too Kaunda, too Mandela, too Shanos and too Griot, too Fionmakul, too She and too Fela. Skip to my Angelou. I only answer to truth. I made a promise to never limit my view. Why keep the gate when I could walk through it? Why spin the track when I could pirouette? Walking down all these emerald aisles, bet my family name on this. I don't die on hills, I move mountains. I know my joy is in Zion. Set my intentions, then let them. Positive charge in my ions. Home is where the heart is. Home is where my art is. Home is where none of my dreams are ever gonna be at risk. Home is where I'm not holding all of your trauma like I was at this. Cause I know that I've got this, but I know I deserve rest. God save the children, I'm gorgeous and young. God bless my heart, look at how far I've come. Spotless and blameless, addicted to shameless, accustomed to claiming my path. But I'm making a plan, making a mark, making a stand, making an oath, and I'm holding my ground, holding my sound. Take what I've found and I'm holding it down.
Arira, hallelujah, feeling so Shinafina, I will not fall for a doula. First from my drive, keep the pressure on. Never lesson, that's lesson one. Got a rira, hallelujah, feeling so Shinafina, I will not fall for a doula. First from my drive, keep the pressure on. Never lesson, that's lesson one.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have a point or a question in that. Complete failure here.
We're just sharing, man.
Where's my what?
We're just sharing. It doesn't always have to have a point.
I thought you just said, where's your Sharon, man?
I'm like, man, where's your Sharon, dude? Grab onto your fucking Sharon. She knows what the questions are. She knows what the point is.
All right.
Get in touch with your inner Sharon.
You might have already answered this question in a way. It was in the past couple of weeks that I listened to that handoff episode of the Channel 101 podcast and started listening to Real Feels. And I was curious to know, you said it's been a year and a half since you started it?
I think a year and a half since I have been in this place where I understand what I'm doing with this project. I understand. I have a much better vision for my future career, my purpose,
your experience?
And how I'm going to do it, and how I'm going to do it.
You said the words, I'm not chasing anything with it. One of the brilliant things about life is that when you're doing something, whether you're chasing it or not, you find, I think what you do with Real Feels is helpful. You know, not to feed the ego, but I think the people that you have on, I would hope and assume that they get a great deal out of being able to, out of being invited to really share and really be vulnerable. And whether people watching it realize it or not, they're being helped because they're seeing it, and maybe they don't know how, but seeing an example of someone being vulnerable, it suddenly becomes attractive to be a real person to those who might not otherwise. Other than the things that I'm throwing out there and what you just said, what are some of the best things that you found in this August 2019, in this over a year since you started putting it out there?
What I love about doing the Real Feels podcast in particular is digging into big talk, big talk, important things to people that are not conversations about things that I love, pop culture and movies and TV shows and comic books and nerd stuff and the industry, all of these things that are not really who we are. They can be. They're a part of it. They're what we like. They're what we like to engage in. But I'm interested in knowing people on a level that they don't really maybe talk about that much. Maybe they do, but it's all I like to talk about now. I've just shifted in what I'm interested in, and I can still give my opinions on, you know, how great Watchmen is. It's a fantastic show, but it's to me, it's like I'm like, you know, what are you dreaming about today? Asking, I think that kind of question could probably be really annoying to some people and sound like really fucking up its own ass, but it's not. Like, I'm just really way more interested in the inner world of the people who I surround myself with and the people who I like. And so it's been really delightful to just like feel the moment when somebody can like relax into themselves completely. And that happens almost every show. It's a really joyful discovery of like, oh, I can share this thing that I am discovering in this moment, or I've always thought, and it's very personal to me, and it's their own philosophy. I mean, we're all philosophers, and so it's all kind of just diving into that, and that's just what's more interesting to me. So it's been an exploration of the real side of people. And I like when people cry on the show. because it's the truest moment you can have, I think.
Yeah.
If you're crying, you are as connected to your heart space as you can be. Mm-hmm. My God. It's pure truth. It's so fucking cool. Crying is so cool. It's so cool. I mean, same thing. It's like it's very similar to screaming. Like true, like a real scream, you know? It's like there's a very raw connected emotion. Screaming is a little more jarring and traumatic sometimes, so crying is preferred, but for me, who's coming from a childhood of some verbal abuse in the household, yelling is not as preferred, but I see the merit in that as much as crying.
I guess I'm not ashamed of crying as an adult. I mean, I was thinking last night about how not anxious in that moment, but excited I was to talk to you, and I was crying about it. But I go back to my childhood of being the kid who everyone called the crybaby in the class. So there is a bit of shame, I guess, past shame.
Well, I mean, it is not traditionally masculine.
Right.
If you were a girl, you'd be more allowed to. It's so funny to even for me to, I still have these barriers from saying stuff like that because of the conditioning and the fear of someone thinking I'm a pussy for liking crying. And I think we're shifting away from that, but it's so prevalent. It's so, so prevalent. And it's exciting to me that it is so prevalent because there's a lot of good work to be done.
Yeah. I really appreciate what you're putting out there. I watched the Mr. Rogers video. I don't want to do a bad service of naming it, but there was a video that you did about how pickup artists ruin single men. Joe Rogan's. Can you sort of...
You want me to just go through the videos I've made recently?
Yeah. Can you help me host my show for me and name your...
Since the beginning of the COVID, you know, quarantine, I have pivoted the Real Feels content away from podcasting and more towards video essays, where I am reading books and studying the things I was already studying, but putting out some information that I think might be helpful and a little bit more in line. This content is more in line with where I want to go and what I want to talk about. And so the subjects I've covered so far are the surprising masculinity of Mr. Rogers, in which I kind of pick apart the idea of what traditional masculinity looks like and question why we can't look at someone who is gentle and empathetic and kind like Mr. Rogers and look at him as a manly man, and which I'm sure is laughable to some people, but it is an important question. And honestly, he's more of a man than pretty much any guy I've ever seen. I mean, I say it in the video because it's true. He accomplishes everything that I look at as my definition of what a man is, which is individualized to everyone. So I did that. I did a video on what Tiger King says about men. Mm-hmm. And that is mostly centered on the power and narcissism of the men in the show. namely, you know, Joe Exotic, but also, you know, a lot of the other guys in the show. And so that was more of a look at really the toxic masculinity in that show is centered around power over others and your environment, a domination, and the narcissistic tendencies that lead to men in power doing horrible things to the people around them. And I've had experience in that, and a lot of people have. And so that's what that video was about. And then I made a video called Joe Rogan Doesn't Understand Toxic Masculinity, which he doesn't. That's very clear. He doesn't think it exists because it does not fit with his ideology and his idea of what a traditional man means. And he rejects that there is a widespread problem of male violence. And he thinks it's all about individuals. But the problem is when the individuals add up to over 95% of spousal abuse, rape, sexual assault being men inflicting it on women, I don't understand where that isn't a problem and when that will eventually become something that is more generalized to cover, you know, in a way, all masculinity. And then my most recent video was called How Pickup Artists Ruined Dating, or How Pickup Artists Ruined Single Men. And that's about the conditioning in the dating world that has been, again, led to the ideas of sexual entitlement over women's bodies and manipulation being the only way to get the woman of your dreams. And the video I'm currently working on about modern current YouTube viral dating coaches is an extension and a continuation of that idea and those topics.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely seen, and I don't know who made it, but some of the most disgusting videos I've ever seen are the ones that are like, these words that I'm going to talk about for 60 minutes, but never utter because I'm trying to sell you a book are the six words that will turn the girl of your dreams into your fuck toy. And I'm sort of poorly paraphrasing, but like,
no, you're not. That's exactly what you're not poorly paraphrasing at all. I just edited a bit that was basically that into my timeline right before we did the show.
It's ridiculous.
There's no way to parse the words that they're saying. That is exactly what they're saying.
I had to check myself as I've grown, as I've evolved. And I feel like I resonate with you on from these videos that you've been doing regarding toxic masculinity. But I remember being a 14-year-old kid in the theater saying, that Stifler's kind of a dick, but isn't he fun to watch? Isn't it fun to watch him waltz through the room calling women bitches? You know what I mean? It's unreal just how big that attitude was, especially at the turn of the century. And you nailed the narrative as far as like what I've seen in pop culture in my life experience in that most recent one.
So it's all good fun. It's all in good fun in the eyes of men. You know, I was obsessed with American Pie and Wedding Crashers and all the old school. I mean, my God, that was that defined who I was as a man. It defined it for a lot of guys. And before that, you know, there's been a million, the raunchy sex comedy. I mean, it's like, but luckily, we don't have to live in tradition. We don't have to live in the past. We don't have to live with what has been popular, what we used to like, what we used to think was okay. And we can finally listen to what women have been saying this whole time.
Yeah.
And not automatically think that they're being a bummer or too sensitive, and understand that, holy shit, we have been, as men, I mean, I can even extend it to as white men in this country, we have been fucking up a lot of shit. Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, it's an easy thing to say now. I think that people can see the systemic racism and police forces and across the board, but it's beautiful how easy it is to see these things now. It's easy post Me Too. It's easier now post George Floyd. We see it. We see all this stuff. Now we can't say we don't know, or we just don't know that we don't know. Now we do know. And so the question that I pose to men that through all of the work in Real Feels and through my work going forward is, are you strong enough? Are you brave enough to change when you see that it is needed? Or are you a coward?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way I can say it, because that's the only way that men respond.
Right.
But it's true.
You got the balls to... Yeah, but I mean, the...
Are you... Yeah.
Discomfort is the only transition state.
Are you too... Yeah. Are you too much of a wimp to change so that women can feel safe in their bodies and in this world? You know? Are you too much of a crybaby to do that?
It's toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. Jordan. Mm-hmm. That one drives me fucking crazy. Like, what does that mean? Toxic masculinity, which is, that's a hilarious expression.
Talk about toxic masculinity. You'll be the poster boy for that shit.
And they're blaming toxic masculinity on this guy shooting up that gay crowd in Orlando. Obviously, it happens that mass shooters are almost exclusively men.
Yeah.
But that's not toxic masculinity.
Yes, it is. And if you agree with them, I totally understand why. You've been conditioned all your life to believe that these are truths. Me too. I've been conditioned. But just like all of us are learning right now about how systemic racism gives the upper hand to white people, it's also true that there are systems that men have set up for themselves to keep women disempowered. All this systemic shit runs deep.
Women will tell you this.
Yes.
If they work at an office
and
they've got a female boss that's a cunt, that is one of the worst fucking, because you can't even fuck her. There's nothing you can do. Nothing you can do to make that bitch happy. She wants to take from you. She wants to squeeze your blood. At least if you're cute and your boss is disgusting and he's a fucking asshole, you could flirt with him a little bit and you could like maybe get him to like you more.
Yeah.
Toxic masculinity is defined by the cultural expectations of men to be aggressive, tough, daring, and dominant in order to realize their full potential as a male. Now, if you feel immediately inclined to post something negative about me, even using the term toxic masculinity, it goes to show how deeply embedded these ideas are in you. That you automatically need to challenge my masculinity for bringing it up. In the words of writer and researcher Rebecca Solnit, surely the mindset of those who think they need to win, to dominate, to punish, to reign supreme, must be terrible. And far from free. And giving up this unachievable pursuit would be liberatory. But a lot of the time for Joe Rogan and many of his guests, this less evolved stance on gender identity rears its head as making femininity a negative thing.
Okay. I looked fake pussies. I looked up like tranny pussies, but I didn't look up, and those
look. That's not good.
What do you mean?
The tranny pussy.
What do you mean they're not good? Like
not
they?
It's not good. It's not real.
Or sometimes it shows up as light homophobia.
Ladies and gentlemen, I retired the word faggot from my vernacular.
Sorry to hear that, Joe.
I gave it up. I gave it up in light of this most recent controversy where I called this guy a faggot.
To highlight this pattern of Rogan's, let's dive deeper into a discussion he has with comedian Jimmy Dore in episode 1412 of the Joe Rogan Experience.
Hey, it's Todd bursting in to introduce this after the fact and identifying it for you as a video you can find and watch in its entirety on the Real Feels YouTube channel. It's called Joe Rogan Doesn't Understand Toxic Masculinity. And now I'll take you back into my conversation with Brad Gage, currently in progress.
It's what works now. That's the tough thing about approaching this subject. The only thing that challenges a man is feminizing them, but that in itself is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That the feminine is the negative, that the feminine is a problem and is unwanted. To me, it's about bravery, and it's about resilience, and it's about standing up for what's right and your own morals. And that's what I've found I can challenge for now until I figure something else out, and that'll be what my book is about, I'm sure. Once I figure that out.
Yeah.
What are the, you know, for men, how do you look at women? Can you look at them less like objects? Can you sexualize them less? Can you fight the urges to harass them or to take what you want from them and instead work in a more collaborative way? And just ask those questions and keep asking yourself those questions, and that's it. That's all we can do.
Yeah.
That's all we can do right now. My aims are higher than that, of course, but for now, what got me started down this road, what shifted my understanding of our relationship, men and women, there is this tension and this kind of antagonism, mm-hmm. And there are a lot of victims to the mindset that exists currently. And why not understand that there is a different way? Because there always is.
Yeah.
Why not choose to do better for everyone? And the answer is, of course, because men have power and dominance and don't want to give it up. Mm-hmm. So understandable. I don't agree with it, but I get why it is such a tough fight.
Beep. Hey, I'm going to skip a part where I went off on a tangent. I thought I was adding something, but I went into outer space and we reeled it in. Brad reeled it in and I neurotically and insecurely apologized and we're back. Beep.
Well, I think you're right. I think I wasn't reeling it in because of you. I could feel myself going off on some philosophical... Okay. Just mind-blowing tangent. It's not any mind-blowing. It's just I can just go on and on if I will allow myself to, and it's not helpful. And the audience doesn't want to listen to that for too long. I'm guessing your audience doesn't want to listen to that for too long. The important part about what I'm doing, I feel, is communicating tough ideas in a actionable way.
Right.
So that's still my challenge. And mm-hmm. so I can go off on the deep end of the philosophy and the morality of things, and that's fun for me, but that's also what's going to make a lot of people tune out. And so I understand that. I'm self-aware about that, and I am. I think I need to go all the way out into space so that I know what I'm looking at, so that I can come down and kind of parcel it out.
That's a very good point, and I couldn't agree more. And that's sometimes what happens when I allow myself to be a little too comfortable in the moment. Because yes, this is a podcast, but from listening to yours and just being like, "This is Brad Gage," I totally could have imagined that we could talk for hours about several things. But with the time that I have, I do want to rein it in even more now and give you my little kitchen sink lightning round.
Sure.
What role does performing or being creative need to play in your life for you to be happy?
I mean, it's what I've been fighting with, grappling with, but it's a huge part. It is, it just is. But performance means different things and can mean different things mm-hmm. than just acting. I love acting. I'm sure I will continue to act, but I am not in a place where I'm gonna just keep on hoping people give me more stuff. And I've made a lot of my own stuff. And so performing as a host and as a speaker and as a communicator, a broadcaster, it's very, very important to me. Probably still the most important aspect of my professional persona.
What's the dumbest game app that you've spent the most time playing?
I don't play video games or game apps. Probably the last one I played was when I was in a kind of darker place 3 years ago. I was probably playing a lot of Angry Birds.
It's all right. It's got some nice sounds, some nice sound effects. Keeps it coming back.
I mean, there were some satisfying elements to it. It's funny. It's like I'd play that and then I was having trouble sleeping and I would play Solitaire on my phone. And Solitaire on the phone's fun in bed because It makes me fall asleep. But I would many, many times be woken back up because I would be dropping the phone on my face because I'm laying in bed playing and I would literally just fall asleep holding it and it would drop straight on my forehead. But yeah, Angry Birds was the last game that I was playing where I was like moving through levels and really focused on getting somewhere.
And don't even get me started on the solitaire metaphor for life. Like this one move could be the end of the game. Shit.
Well, what? What do you mean by that? I'm interested. Well,
if you pile the wrong thing on top of the, if we're talking about standard solitaire, you end up with a game.
I don't know how to play spider.
Depending on the move, you'll get yourself in a position where if you're playing it, you know, fairly with no undo moves, the game's over because you've move that king out too quickly or something like that. Mm-hmm. Making that call is like making a big decision in life. And you can only hope that you're making the right one. And every time I play solitaire, I'm like, that last big decision. It reminds me of that. I don't know why.
I see it. It's, I don't know if I personally agree with that view.
I don't even either. That's the funny part.
oops is not a four-letter word, as my grandmother says. You know, sometimes you do something, you make a mistake, and you learn from it, and then you move on, yeah. And you can still win, you can still succeed. It's a hell of a game. Game of Kings.
There's a whole conversation that I would love to have with you, or just pick your brain on, like, the power of resilience, which is something that I'm all about.
That's a big one.
The last two, what's the worst thing that someone could say to you?
In general, or worst thing that something could say to me to hurt me?
Well, one is,
because I'll answer both, I guess.
Okay.
Like, you know, it's funny. It's like simple phrases, not to say that they're necessarily bad, because they happen, and they can be important in someone's journey. But if someone said, "I hate myself," that would give me some pain. That would be tough to hear, because everyone has so much, you know, beauty to celebrate, no matter what circumstance they're in. And so I hate myself would be a tough thing for me to hear about, just from anybody. If someone were to say something to me, that the worst thing someone could say to me, I don't care. I don't care about the environment. I don't care about people. I don't care about empathy. I don't care about pain. I don't care about oppression. That's the worst thing. I don't care. Because I think that's what we're fighting. We're fighting an apathy right now, at least in our country, for things that are very human and that are outside of our own world, our own little sphere. Things that are not our, you know, our things. People who are not our people. And I don't care. Right. And so that's people saying that is what gets us where we are now. I don't care that women are having forced hysterectomies at the border of Mexico. Mm-hmm. The least you can do is care. You mm-hmm. can say, I'm not going to do anything about it, or I don't know what to do, or you know, multitude of other things, but saying I don't care is the worst thing.
I hate to imagine an instance of that, but that's a very...
It's very prevalent. Jesus, it's uh-huh. definitely prevalent now, on both sides. Is it, you know, yeah. People don't care on either side about each other. And I get it. I'm not going to say everybody should care about each other. I mean, I believe that, but I'm not also blind to why this is happening. And so, it's just unfortunate if somebody loses connection with the bigger picture, other people, the world, because that means they are disconnected with themselves.
God, I love the sound of your voice, and I love your fucking brain. I do want this to go on forever, but this is the last question, and that question is the flip. What's the best thing someone could say to you?
I love you.
Simple.
I mean, it feels good. It doesn't matter who it's from. It just feels good. Why not? It doesn't hurt you. It might hurt you to say it, depending on who you're saying it to, or depending on your own conditioning of being vulnerable or emotional or using the L word. But it's the best thing. That's it. It's easy. It feels good. Me and my male friends, the men in my life, were saying it a lot more. And these aren't guys who are necessarily in my line of work.
Right.
And I think guys are trying it out more, and it's not that big of a deal.
Dude.
So.
Dude. I don't even say that.
Bro, I love you.
Is it weird that we're just talking for the first time, and I don't know when the next time will be, but is it weird that I want to say it now? I'm thinking of social etiquette and
I was hoping you would. I don't know. It's not weird. I think I love you, Todd, and I love the work you do.
Very much back at you, man. I love you, and I love Real Feels. I feel like anyone who hasn't seen it yet would benefit from it. I'm trying to find the perfect words, but I so sincerely urge you all to check it out. If you haven't had enough reasons, you obviously skipped to just now in the podcast, and you also need to laugh. We all need to laugh, and it's very important. and Brad, the stuff that you've done on Channel 101, which was for 7 or so years my introduction to you. Only recently have I like deep dived on trying to connect with people on social media because I don't use it that much. But you've done.
Did I do my first show 7 years ago?
I think 2013 is when New York Stories.
Yeah.
And
no,
teenage alcoholics.
That makes sense.
You're a very, very funny guy.
I appreciate that, and I'm grateful that you like the stuff. I love the stuff. I love my work with Channel 101. I mean, if I have something that's out there, I love it. I mean, it wouldn't be up if I didn't. And so 101 has been a wonderful community, a home, you know, a place to cut my teeth and develop my tools and work with people who are just the actual funniest people I know. And may it live long and continue to foster more people. And I would love to do something else for someone's show whenever. You know, I would love to be in another show. I don't know if I'm going to be making a show anytime soon because I need to focus on what I'm focusing on, and not focusing on what I'm focusing on has been a big challenge of mine for a lot of my career. But I love 101. I love the people that love 101, and I'm glad that it connected us.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Todd Donald Show. Starring, produced, and edited by Todd Donald. The piano music in the rap is by J.P. Sunga, who you can find at jpsunga.com. The theme music is Mackey Alkino by William Chernoff. Find him at chernoff.band. And I'm Milo Axelrod, Todd's favorite, bar none, human voice. And I'm not bragging, he wrote this. If you'd like to hear more of my voice, check out my podcast, Describing a Rock, in which I describe some rocks. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Please support The Todd Donald Show by sharing it with anyone who might enjoy it. Follow and interact with @ToddDonaldShow on Twitter and Instagram. And if you feel like going the extra mile on iTunes, please subscribe, rate, and review, preferably in its favor. Have a great day, friends.